going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And of course, I'm not in here alone. I'm rolling in the same direction with mi amigo, Philio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. Man, I had an interesting week last week. We took off because of Labor Day and everything. But yeah, man, the weather's getting cooler. It's been raining a lot. And I can feel fall approaching, and I'm kind of excited. I'm not going to lie.
Well, we had a real busy week last week. In case you don't know what was going on, we ended up doing two shows. One called Soul Wanderings with AJ Rasmussen, a good friend of ours over on KGRA. And then later on, we dropped another one that week. I guess, let's see, AJ's was on Wednesday. And y'all can go back and find that if you want to listen to that, and me and Kyle being interviewed and chit-chatting. And then Friday, our buddy Derek over at Monsters Among Us dropped one that we had jumped on and helped him with that, too. So he had invited us on to discuss some creepy, crazy museum stories.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So technically, we did two shows last week, just not one on Expanded Perspectives.
Yeah,
not one
for y'all, yeah. So our bad, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And we got a new number. We'll have to drop that whole thing, but we have a new call-in hotline, so I don't want to forget that whole thing. But so we had the old one, and it worked about 10% of the time. Like, literally, it was too short, and then we'd be listening, and y'all that were calling in might think it was clear, and that it was, you know, we could hear it, and then it would be muffled, things were dropping off, things were breaking up. It was completely ridiculous. So we just kind of ignored it for a bit. Well, Kyle decided to fix it. So he jumps in the middle of that and gets it rocking. So the new number that we have, I'm sure you got to dial a one, but it's 1-888-393-BRUD. B-R-U-D. 1-888-393-BRUD. Let me make sure I get those numbers right, too, that's in there. And what would I say it is? I'll have to look it up. Look it up, but it's B-R-U-D. I could give you the numbers. I'll give it to you whenever we get ready to get out of here. But yeah, so we had a great time talking to all of them. We've got this new number, so if y'all have any crazy stories,
yeah, I know please, you do. Please.
And if you don't feel like typing them up, lots of times you don't feel
saying.
Like, just call in with it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do. I've done when I'm driving around and stuff. I do voice to text. It's really handy. So if you have a long story and you don't feel like typing, I totally get it. Typing's a pain, especially if you're not used to doing it all the time. Or you're not very, you know, not good at writing, just call the line and tell us your story. And also, when you call to tell the story, make sure you let us know on there if you want your name used or not. It doesn't matter either way. Or, heck, when you call up, if you don't want your name used, just make up an alias.
That's true. Okay.
Say, like, this is Spider-Man, and this is my encounter.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just call yourself, this is Cam, and this is Kyle. Just, we'll use our own name if you want us to. Listen, folks, it's 888-393-2789. 8-3 and in that way and that's the way I guess it's going to be from here on out. So I think we've put this in lock. I don't know how you still swung that to get the BRUD.
Well, because no one ever uses that. Yeah. And if you're new to the show, if you're not familiar with why we use the term brud, when my boys were little, they were twins, they're identical twins. I used to always say, hey, come here, bud, because I couldn't tell which one was which. And I'd just say, hey, bud, you need help with that? Hey, bud, would you like something to drink? And then they started calling each other a cross between bud and brud because they're trying to say brother, like, brother, would you hand me that? So they would just say brud all the time. So we just adopted the moniker and just started saying brud all the time, which means if you're a close friend of ours, you're a brud.
You're a brud. That's just how it works.
Same reason that the studio is Skeleton Studios, not Skeleton Studios. Yes, we are mispronouncing it on purpose. Mm-hmm. Once again, because the boys couldn't say skeleton, they would say Skeleton. So you're trying to come up with unique names when you're starting a business and
it doesn't
website.
Sound like you could say it just then.
I know, right? It's hard. It's hard to say the made up word. It's hard to find like numbers and websites and domains and all kinds of stuff, tax ID numbers and stuff that hasn't been used. So if you make up a word like brud or skeleton, actually it's very easy, Cam.
Works easier.
That number, I typed it one time and it came up.
Perfect.
So.
Well, it's ours now and it's for y'all to call. So holla at your boy.
Yeah, and if you've called before and we never talked about it, there's a good chance it was lost somewhere in the ether. So just go ahead and call again.
Or it sounds a lot like that whenever yeah. you talk to it.
Well, so. And I think the last number was, it was a free service on Skype where this is actually a paid for service. So there was only a limited amount of time to tell your story. So if you had a lengthy story, you'd have to call back again, pick up. There shouldn't be any of those problems with this one.
Yeah, we ought to be good to go now.
I think so. So that would be Very interesting. Speaking of stories, check this story out. This was sent to us by one of our listeners. It says, "Hi, I am a low Earth orbit device operator." Talk about a cool job title.
I don't even know what that means, but it does that mean you fly kites?
I don't know. It says, "I am a low Earth orbit device operator for the for a military contractor at the NRO. My job takes me all over the U.S. for launches, and I have a weird story to tell. In one of my many trips to D.C., I was lodged at a hotel near Embassy Row, as opposed to our usual location in Fairfax County, Virginia. As a veteran, I suffered from PTSD and couldn't sleep well most of the time I was there. On the last night, I decided to go to a club, and I walked out at about 9 p.m., down to DuPont Circle area. As I was going through a street, when at the end or the other end of the sidewalk, I saw a woman walking towards me. Her silhouette looked like she was wearing clothes similar to those worn in Eastern Europe.
Hey now.
Similar to the ones worn by Polish Jews at the time of World War II, even wearing a scarf and a winter-like coat, carrying a large cloth bag. Now, mind you, the reason this was odd is because it was in the middle of summer. As she passed by me, I noticed that even though she was severely hunched over, she was as tall as me, and I'm almost 6 feet tall. I looked at her and smiled, being friendly, and she looked away with her small blue-gray eyes. Her head and face were much longer than mine. She had high cheekbones, a long jaw. She looked very old, probably in her 90s. Similar looking to Sarah Jessica Parker, only very old. She didn't smile back, but turned away and turned her head slightly down. She looked very, very pale and expressionless. Well, I kept walking. I went to the club, met some woman from Spain, and struck out, so I had to walk back to the hotel all by myself. On the way back, I took the same street, and as I turn in, I see the same old woman at the other side of the sidewalk. As I got close, she looked at me and said, "You are lost?" But I couldn't see her lips move. I told her, "No, I got my GPS here." She looked at my phone and reached out to touch it, and I saw her hand to be very long, about 1.5 foot longer than mine.
Whoa!
She noticed, and I found her hands estranged, and she said, "We all have long hands." Once again, her lips didn't move. I looked at her hands and saw that they were very old hands and had very thin skin. I could see her blue and red veins and almost her bones. She pulled her hands close to her and clutched her bag with both hands and walked back 2 steps away from me. She said good night and began walking opposite to my heading. I said good night, ma'am, and I walked away. I went on telling myself not to look back, but about a minute later, I turned back, and I saw the woman take 2 steps, and all of a sudden she turns back. Her legs, back, and neck cracked as she straightened up, and her height grew from what it was to about 7 or 8 feet tall. Her face was enraged. Her arms extended to the sides and seemed to reach her knees. She screeched, but her mouth was open now, long. She had no teeth. She turned around and kept walking, this time faster and fully erect to her 7 or 8 feet tall. I was scared. I did the same. At times, crossing the street without even looking back as if I was being followed. I got into my hotel room and didn't sleep until the sun came up. That morning, I left D.C. And from that moment on, I am never alone out there. I will try to be with anyone that flies with me, and if I can't, I stay at the hotel. What do you think of that?
That is
like some creepy old woman.
Dude, that's disturbing.
Grew in height and had long hands and was talking through mental telepathy, and her face elongated, and she let out a horrific screech.
Like she's some sort of siren.
Yeah.
Or like a banshee.
I don't know.
Or the La Llorona.
Yeah, something creepy. A witch.
Something, dude, that's disturbing as hell.
I like the story.
Imagine, though, coming back from the bar, and you've been tossing back wobbly pops, and you stumble upon this old gal, and that starts happening.
Having a few White Claws.
Right? Ain't no laws.
When you're drinking White Claws.
That's true.
That's right. That's true.
That's what I've heard. That's what they tell me.
What they tell me.
On Natter Day.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't mention that he was drunk or anything. He just mentioned that he went there to, he was trying to kill some time. You're in a strange city. I've had to do that before where you kind of go get something to eat and then you just kind of mill around because, hell, the hotel room's boring.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not one of the guys that's just going to sit on the bed and watch 3 hours of Duck Dynasty. No, thank you.
No, but you'd be watching like Cyborg or Kickboxer.
Now you're talking.
But just like that, what could that have been? And why, if she is something evil like evil, what is she doing just lingering around town?
I don't know.
Now, it doesn't say exactly what city it was in, does it?
Yeah, D.C., Washington, D.C.
Yeah, so she's dressed like a 30s to 40s European woman.
Eastern European with a scarf and everything, yeah.
Hmm.
So, I mean, maybe, he's not from there, so perhaps there's a spirit of a woman similar to that's seen there. I'd have to dig into the research.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's was physical. She reached out to try to touch his phone, but he, pulled back.
Yeah. And then it almost sounds alien-like, too, so I don't know. That's a very interesting story.
I thought for a minute he was going to say that the knees bent backwards like they did in the arrival.
Yeah. Well, I've got you one here. Now, this kind of goes along with one of the stories or a few of the stories that I touch on coming up in this segment. But you're going to like this. This comes from a database that was uploaded by the great J.C. Johnson. And you're going to dig this. This from a Navajo Nation reservation in Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I don't know exactly. What was that? Was that the Navajo reservation that we were alongside?
Man, I don't remember.
I can't remember it. I want to say, yeah, but then what do I know?
What the heck was the name of the towns? It slipped my mind right now.
Morenci. We were just north of Morenci.
Yeah. And what was the other town, the bigger town with like the Walmart? Starts with an S.
Stafford?
Maybe. It was really,
Safford, maybe?
Maybe.
I'd have to look and see again anyway.
But there was whatever reservation was right around there.
Yeah, it's got to be. And this might be it. I don't know, because I don't know how big, of course, they are and the whole thing. So Lon had this posted up, and it just caught my eye because I'm like, we received a story, and this is what I'm going to be covering. But this is a story I'm going to share with y'all. It says, this happened to my friend Kat's mom. Kat was just a kid and had an older brother and a younger brother. They all lived on the res of the Navajo Nation with their parents in your standard Navajo trailer. Kat's dad was a police officer for the Navajo Nation, so he was out a lot, and there were many nights spent with just their mom. No worries, though, because Kat's mom was independent, strong, and not afraid of the vast, endless desert around her or the wildlife. So one night, it's business as usual. Dad's out working a long graveyard shift, kids are being total pains and won't go to bed. Kat's mom is trying to coax them to bed with watching movies in the bedroom, and they start whining for a snack. So she leaves them with a movie and goes into the kitchen to get out 6 slices of bread, 3 pieces of bologna and cheese and mayo, and as she is about to put sandwiches together, she hears a sound, and she turns around to look at the front door. Now, she says the front door is wide open, and there's a woman standing in it. Now, she described the woman as
Eastern European looking.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Long fingers. No. Close. You're going to like this. She said she's a very short, thin, white woman with blonde hair. Said this woman was dressed for summer, apparently was wearing shorts and a T-shirt, a pair of flip-flops, and she had like a pixie haircut. But she goes on to add that she looked dirty and ragged, which is not uncommon if you've ever been around the res land they write. It says white people on the res are kind of a joke. Depending on where they go, it can get really dangerous for them. So they're not seen as much of a threat. Well, apparently Kat's mom was of the attitude, what are you doing in my house? So she asked the woman several things like, what are you doing here? Do you need help? Etc. Like you would. Says the woman didn't reply and seemed to her to be in a very strange or weird state of mind. Now, being a cop's wife, of course, her first impression was, well, this is some white moron who'd paid a little too much for some peyote and then got lost out here with her dummy friends in the desert. So she was being, pretty harsh to this girl, she says, and was kind of mad that she had even gotten into her house with her kids in there and all this.
I mean, it's an intruder. You don't just barge into someone's house.
And it was saying nothing at all. Wouldn't even speak. So Kat's mom said, look, she got completely pissed that the woman wouldn't answer her and just stood there and then kind of started shrugging her shoulders and giggling. She then puts her hands on the girl's shoulders to push her outside onto the porch steps into the deck right there in front of the house. And said she takes her, pushes her outside, and said the woman stood there looking still down at the ground, giggling and kind of shivering. So Kat's mom said, well, you need to get out of here. You know, get off of my property. Go on. She said this was when she realized something was a little off. She had first thought the girl was on drugs, you know, something along those lines.
Right, yeah, makes sense.
And she said she was looking at her like a cop would, like you're sizing up a girl, and said that she doesn't have any track marks. There's no bruises. She said there's nothing except she's covered in dirt, like she had wallowed around in it, and that she smelled bad. She goes on to say that she smelled like a wild animal would smell, not like a homeless person, but like an animal would actually smell. So Kat's mom said she just stood there and she started realizing that maybe she wasn't really taking this serious enough, and that the woman on the porch steps started, like, she kind of noticed and started getting real jittery, like she was cold. And then Kat's mom said, but the way she was moving was more unnatural than someone involved in something. She said this was in the summer in the Arizona desert, so there should have been no need for her to be cold. But she said, so Kat's mom goes back in, slams the door. Well, the door has got one of those little diamond-shaped windows in it. So, you know, on the trailer house door. So she said that she could see the woman, and through the glass, she's shaking and spasming violently standing there on the front. So the mom says, you know, Kat's mom said, I looked away for just a couple of seconds, looked down, deadbolt locked the door, looked back out the window, and the girl ain't there. So she said her first thing was go to the kids. So she did. She said she goes in the room and the baby's crying, and Kat and her older brother were scared. They hadn't seen this woman, but had heard their mother talking to someone and could tell that their mom was getting a little agitated and worked up too. So she said, you know what we're going to do? We're all just going to stay here in the bedroom together. So apparently they say this was the safest part of the house that they had believed, because they had blessed it. At that end of the house, they use cedar, I guess, like sage cedar. And they said that there's eagle feathers that are hanging in the on the walls and in the doorways. So they have all this in their house. So she said, Kat's mom said, so, you know, she lays down there watching movies with the kids. They all fall asleep. Kat's mom said she heard something moving around outside. But, you know, this is on the res in the desert, middle of nothing. She said, so it's kind of like that, you know, every night. So it's something that she's used to. But apparently, because she's on edge from all this, she got up. She's like, you know what? I need to go into the kitchen. I can't shake this feeling off. Why? I just got a feeling of this dread. And of course, this is back before they, you know, phones, anything like that. So she didn't really have a way of getting in touch with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So she said a few hours go by, things outside are getting quiet, but she can't sleep. She just has this feeling. So she went ahead and decided to call her husband. So she gets up, she goes in there in the living room, and she said that she had to go near the kitchen, and for some reason, she said that kitchen area of the house was like emanating this eerie feeling. She didn't want to go in the kitchen. So she gets up next to it, gets the phone, goes back into the bedroom, gets, you know, calls her husband, calls the station. The station gets hold of her husband, who's patrolling. They said, hey, look, would you want an officer to send out in there? And she's like, yeah, please. She goes back to the bedroom to wait for the officers to knock on the door. She said she was in there a good half hour, you know, from anything from driving distance, but said the officer got there pretty quick, and he was a coworker of her husband's. So, of course, they know each other. And, of course, he's a Navajo also. So she said, you know, feels great. But she said that he seemed very jumpy and very nervous while he was standing on the front porch, and that he took her statement from her and then what had happened, and that he had seen no one on the roads, but definitely nobody fitting the description that she gave. So they set up a patrol search in that area that night just in case. And they and here's what's wild. They said they decided to burn some sage and cedar and all that stuff in the house right then. Even the officer was like, yeah, you might want to go ahead and bless the house again. Let's do all that. So they go through this. And, of course, she thanks him. Said the officer, you know, after having the conversation, all that stuff, they leave. Calmed her down. Said enough that she didn't feel the need to barricade in the bedroom anymore. So she goes over to the kitchen, burning the cedar and all that stuff on the stovetops, what they're doing it. And said she noticed that the counter, and that Kat said that her mother was the most scared she'd been in her life, that the bread, the bologna, and the cheese were all gone, completely gone. Said they had been there hours before, and she knew for a fact she hadn't moved them, and she had also known for a fact that she had deadbolted the door. So her theory is that this woman came back in the trailer while everybody was in the bedroom, and took the food. And that's why the mother had that instinctive, dreadful fear of going back to the kitchen.
That's possible.
Yeah. So that was a fellow, Alex, sent that in.
But maybe it's just a deranged white person, like you said, high on peyote.
It could have very well been.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, to me.
But if you deadbolt the door, where did the food go?
That's true.
Because she said, look, she was fixing the sandwiches. She hears a knock on the door. She turns around, goes and handles her business, gets the crazy woman out of the house, locks everything up, goes straight to the kids.
Skinwalkers can go through walls.
I'm assuming. Well, if you're a skin, maybe she turned into like a little snake.
I don't know what
that. Or a mosquito flew into there, and then I don't know how this works. We're all guessing.
I don't understand the parameters of being a skinwalker.
I don't either.
Do you get to choose? Like when you're like, say you become a, do you become a skinwalker and be like, nah, man, I'm going to be a tortoise.
I think it's different for everybody.
Or do you
that
just
gets
get to do it at will. Like I'm going to be an owl right now. Power of otter. Power of worm.
Yeah,
you just change it to whatever you
want. I don't think it works like that. I think everybody's different. At least in my mind, a skinwalker, like you may turn into something completely different than what I could turn into.
Somebody's really cool, like Jackson over there. He turns into a cougar. Well,
yeah.
Me, I just turn into a moth.
Yeah, that's right. I become a mayfly. That's the cool thing. I got to dodge birds when I turn it. Yeah, you never hear I'm turning into like little things. It's got to be like large animals.
Like I said, I wish I understood the parameters.
Creepy stuff.
It's definitely always creepy.
Large, creepy animals is what they turn into. Folks, let's take a quick break. When we get back, speaking of creepy, I'm going to catch y'all up with a few of the things that I talked about on AJ's show with these fey folk and these gnome encounters. Then I'm going to get into a few really interesting and disturbing gnome encounters, or at least the fae or dwindy or brownie or whatever you like. But either way, I think you're going to enjoy it. Let's jump over there. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Going on, y'all. And yes, it's that time again. It's time for story time with Uncle Ham. As you heard Kyle and I discuss, we were on a few other podcasts last week. We got to jump on with our friend AJ at Soul Wanderings, and we got to hop on there with our good amigo, Mr. Derek Hayes of Monsters Among Us. And we had a great time. A jamming awesome time. But during the interview with AJ, I had talked to little bit about some more of the crazy little people sightings, right? Like everybody loves the idea of gnomes, loves the idea of fae folks. Everybody knows how much I love the idea of the fae folk. So I wanted to do a little recap, kind of what we discussed over that, and then share a few interesting stories that involve the fae. And then one very interesting story I received from a fellow that has recently started listening to the show. So without further ado, we're going to jump into it. For those of you that missed out, and you probably remember this story, I believe I covered it somewhat like it. We've discussed, man, I'm trying to think of how long ago it's been. Ooh, it's been a few years. It's been a hot minute, y'all. So real quick, it was about a fellow named Dave, lived in an old farmhouse in New York State. Was in there, lived in there with his parents, I believe his sister, and his grandmother lived with him. And he had told a story about how he heard a wailing sound, like a howling, if you will, outside his window. And during all this time, he was living with his grandmother, living with him. I say he's living with his grandma. His grandma was living with him. And so he hears this sound and he freaks out. And so he goes into his grandma's room, climbs in bed with her because his parents are upstairs. They all live upstairs. He lives downstairs. His bedroom's downstairs. His grandma's downstairs. So he runs in there, climbs in bed next to her. And as the course of the story goes, that he knew it wasn't the wind that was making the sound. She kept telling him, don't worry about it. It's just the wind. It's just the storm. Don't worry about it. She hugs him up, turns him like away from the window. Here's all this stuff. He snuggles up next to grandma because, of course, grandma makes things better. And then that's it. He said the storm kind of passed. And when the storm passed, there was no more blowing wind. There was no more crazy wailing that he was hearing. All that was gone. And, of course, he went to sleep. He said he gets up the next morning, and when he woke up, that his grandma wasn't in the bed, and so he goes out looking for her, and lo and behold, there's footprints on the porch all over the floor in this whole area. And what he had said was that it looked like toddler footprints and or like little moccasins, you know, like the little footprints, not like a tread of a shoe, but just little footprints of something that may have just covered its feet with something like moccasins. So I always think of the little tiny Native American story that I had received from Doc. And there's several of the stuff that we had talked about in that. And that she kept on cleaning, and that he said that he knew that whatever was making the sound outside the window had to be what left those footprints. And so it had made a lasting impression on him. And then there was a story that I had found or received. And long or the short of the story is remembering that a woman had said that her mother had told her a story about a time that she was going into the closet and carrying her as a baby. So this woman's telling the story like, hey, my mom told me this. She was carrying me. She was going to go into the closet, and out of the closet comes this little gnomish looking person or creature and is like motioning to her, the mother, to give the baby to me. Like, let me have the baby. Let me have, you know, let me hold it. Let me hold it. And the mom was like, yeah, I knew if I gave the baby that I would never get the baby back. And first of all, it's like, why would anybody hand the baby over to a fae folk, right? Like, what are you, out of your mind? And so, of course, she turned and ran, and that when she came back, of course, it was gone, and that they never saw it again. It was a one-off thing, which is a very, you know, very odd, strange story. There was also a very interesting story, which is going to sound, it has a lot of telltale signs, and I had shared this one, of the one that I received. And the story that I'm talking on this is this guy tells a story about his grandpa had told him a story that his grandfather used to live on a small ranch in Mexico with his older brother, around 12 to 14 at the time, and that they had heard something what sounded like singing, and he and his brother went to look at it and said that they had seen from the bushes what they thought were a couple of small people, little people, and his brother said that they were Dwindy. And, of course, we've covered the Dwindies in stories, and that the brother and all that, they left and said, you know, we need to get out of here. They go home, and they said, you know, the grandpa said, you know, we never really saw him after that. We just kind of encountered him one time. I believe they were checking cattle or doing something along those lines. Well, then there was another story that I come across that comes again from a ranch in Mexico. Now, what's really interesting is we get a lot of these stories when you start talking about these Dwindies or people seeing these small gnome-like people. I don't really know how to piece it together for y'all. We get these stories almost in a certain part of the world, and that part of the world would be the Southwest. I'm talking about Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, and Mexico. We get now we hear them, you know, up into California. I mean, we do get fae all over, but this rough country area of the rock, the desert, anything out there that, you know, it stings you, bites you, pokes you, whatever it is. In that rough part of the Southwest, it seems like we get a lot of these tales of what appear to be Dwindy. And I don't get it. You would think that they would continue to move. Like, wouldn't it be easier if you were a 3 foot tall creature, a little gnome character? Wouldn't it be easier to hide in the Pacific Northwest? Or wouldn't it be easier to hide in Alaska or in East Texas? I mean, you're talking about the piney woods and thick, heavy woods. You get up into the Pine Barrens. Wouldn't it be easy to hide in the Pine Barrens? I mean, you think of all of this land that we've all lived in. Everyone listening, wherever you live, you know a plot of woods or you know an area out there where you were like, hell, man, anything could be hiding out there. Well, wouldn't it be easy if it was small? If it's something that's 18 inches tall, 8 inches tall, 36 inches tall, like something small would be easy. Like, you drive by the woods or pastures or fields, lots of times there are deer and coyotes and bobcats and everything out in there. And more than likely, they're looking at you. You just don't see them. So I've always thought, like, wouldn't it be easier to hide in a place that's got more hiding places? But then I have to remind myself, a lot of these places they're discussing are very remote, very rocky, rough to get to, you know, hard terrain to cover unless on foot. So you're not going to get a lot of traffic unless it's foot traffic to get in and out. So you're less likely to be seen, you know, whereas if you, you know, you were living up in the mountains around Colorado, up around Vail or Aspen, you might end up somebody popping in on you, right? You know, anyhow. So I don't know why it's in this little area. Now we do, like I said, get some before, but in this little area, it seems to be a hot spot. So there was another story about a fella who said his family has a ranch in Mexico, and that these stories like this do come up from time to time from other locals in the area. He said he didn't really think anything of it till somebody had shown it to him, that they had taken him to a place. Now this is really strange, because what he describes isn't, it doesn't really sound like the gnomes the way we are known. We've known the gnome, right? This doesn't, the Travelocity or whatever that gnome is that's on there, the little garden gnome, this doesn't really sound like this. This fella says that there was a place that had a little creek through it, and which there it is again with, we're talking rough country, which is where this one story comes from, and creeks, some of the water. This is all of this makes me start leaning more towards the idea that these things may have a lot more to do with the missing 411 or people that have gone missing or maybe misled, you know, and then when they're found, you know, quite some time later, whether they're alive, and they kind of seem to be in that haze. It's almost like they've come out of going to the other side with the Fae. But anyway, this guy tells a story that they were rocks that were being thrown at their house on the reg. And he said, I don't mean big rocks. You know, he said, I'm talking about like the size of a marshmallow. You know, not the big fat marshmallows we're talking about, just a normal marshmallow size stone, little like river rocks, little round river rocks. He said some more like pebbles. And he said that he always believed it was kids out there messing around, but he could never understand why kids would go out at night just to come plink rocks from a very hard to get to area at a little house out in the middle of nowhere. So he's like, I've blamed kids my whole life. He goes, till I found out that a couple of cousins and an uncle were actually involved in, they had what was considered a gifting log, which is what we've known of it as now. But he just said a log that they would leave things on, certain types of food or candy, and that they would go and leave it there before they went to this house. So what this house was more like a shop. Picture just a regular old tin building that you would have some stuff in and that you would go there to party, right? So it's out in the middle of nowhere, out in the country, in Mexico. Everybody shows up and that's just where they go to party and they leave. And that they would go and leave things. If they didn't leave things and they stayed the night, you would be terrorized by these rock throwing incidences. But if you would leave something on the gifting tree or on the gifting log, right, you wouldn't have that issue. Whatever you brought out there, like that night, it's almost like you were having to pay homage. You would give homage to the Fae, and they would let you party in the little tin building. So it makes you feel, or leaves the impression, that maybe that was put there in an area that the Fae owned, or what they had already laid claim to. And so it's a really neat thing. Now, the funny thing was that he said these, the candies that they would leave were unwrapped. It wasn't like they'd been chewed through or torn out of. It had been like you had grabbed the edges, pulled and spun to unwrap them, taken the candy out and put it down and left the wrapper. And he goes on to say that they would be wrappers. The candy would be gone if they left meat. He said we'd leave jerky or meat or whatever we would have that we knew something was going to eat. We would leave there. Now, I'm not so impressed with the leaving of the meat. Everything's going to eat that. You could have birds fly by and get it, raccoons, possums. We've discussed this, you know, to no end. But when you start talking about the candy and it being unwrapped, well, how many animals out there can really unwrap it? A raccoon? I mean, a raccoon, you would think, could probably unwrap a candy. But what else would be out there that would be eating unwrapping candy? I don't know. Now, he goes on to say, look, I know that some of the animals out here, he said, are tricky enough to pull this move off, but I'm not sure what it was. He said, but the most disturbing things was that what we found were little footprints. He said 4 to 5 inches wide, folks, and 6 or 7 inches long. So a rectangular foot. And he said the only thing I can equate it to was when you see the tracks, like guys carrying casts of a Bigfoot track, it looked just like that track, only about 6 inches long and 5 inches wide. So almost perfectly square, flat foot. he said, so not really an animal track, but not really a person track either. And he goes on to say, I've never seen what's leaving those tracks, and I've never seen tracks like that anywhere else. And he said, you know, I don't know what was ever leaving them. I don't know whatever became of it. I can't put my finger on it. Well, I hope some of y'all remember this, because when I had found all this and dug back through the archives and all the stories, stuff we'd save, I had found this, and this is going to lead into something else, but there was a tale that had happened back in Porterville, California. There was and some of y'all old schoolers will remember this. There was a woman named Tammy had reported this took place in 04, where she had lived on 100 acres and had like an old, there was an old barn on it. And like a lot of old, I think like an old chicken coop. There was just an old ranch style home. And that she said that the barn always seemed evil. Like it always had a dark undertone to it. And that the animals on the place that they owned wouldn't even go near it. She was like, ducks wouldn't go there. The cats wouldn't live in the barn. The dog wouldn't like to go in the barn. Like, they would go all around, but they did not want to be anywhere near that barn. Even the chicken. She goes on to say the chicken coop that was there attached to the side of the barn, the chickens were always ready to get out. Like, you could just tell. Like, they didn't want to be near the barn, which is weird. You know, a barn's a barn, unless, of course, something is using it to live there, like some unseen critter is hiding out there. Now, she said that they would go all over. Like, these animals would go everywhere on the ranch, on this 100-acre property, except that barn. So, and she even goes on to say that they would have like stray cats, you know, would show up. And of course I say stray and she even writes stray, but it could have easily been what is considered, at least here in Texas, barn cats. Cats have other babies. They're raised wild. I'm sure everybody listening knows what I'm talking about. Just not domesticated cats. You see them out here in the city all the time too. And just regular old barn cats. But she even said that even these cats that would just show up wouldn't go in the barn. They would stay away from the barn. And it's odd when animals, it's one thing when people get this funky feeling, we can talk ourselves out of it, right? It's real easy for us to go, yeah, I'm just making things up in my head. I'm just overreacting. It's a whole other thing when animals act really funny. For some reason, we put a lot of validation into that. And I think for good reason, they are what kept us alive for the longest time. Hence man's best friend. I mean, there's a lot of this stuff that you need to learn to kind of look at your animals. Now she goes on to even say, and y'all might remember this, that there was a funny sound would come from there. Like you may hear noises in that barn that sounds animal-like, but they weren't of an animal that she'd known what it was. And she said that there would even be times to where you would have animals go missing. And so you would chalk it up to coyotes. You know, we all know owls or hawks or any large bird of prey is going to prey on chickens. They usually leave the remains. You can see possums or raccoons or, you know, something like that. Chickens eaten by just about everything, right? Cause it's good. Let's be honest. Chicken's good. So she said that even talking about this with her family, they was always like the hint of, oh, it was just a coyote. Right, a coyote come in there and got the dog, or a coyote come and got the cat, or a coyote did this, or, you know, so it was never anything other than that. And I think we're all guilty. We're all guilty. I'm guilty. All of us are guilty by just rationalizing. Rationalizing is what we do best. And so we rationalize it off because we don't want to think about it, and we don't have time. Let's be honest. You're busy in your life. I mean, you're listening to this podcast. More than likely, you're working on something else than listening at this podcast. You're not just doing it. So we're all busy. So we don't have time. You know, you're out trying to buy groceries. You're trying to pay your bills. You're fighting the COVID off. You're trying to cover everything that's going on. You don't have time to worry about, well, what stole my chicken? That's not comes up in your mind, right? Nothing. Now, she did go on to say, and you all remember this, that she said she heard a very evil sounding chuckle, like a laugh, and that she saw what she described as a 3-foot tall gnome. Like, had on baggy little black pants, had a beard, had like a, the best part is it had the pointed hat, like a reddish colored pointed hat, and it had a gold colored shirt. So he was styling, right? He's going hard in the paint, picking up gnome chicks. But the really wild thing was that she said that it had black eyes. It was a black eyed gnome. And that's a really, really creepy thing to say. Not to mention, of course, anytime you put something with black eyes like that, you see, everybody sees those full contacts that'll make your eyes black. That stuff's just unnerving. So she, remember, she had told this whole story, and they go in, and it's a really interesting story. Nothing is out of character other than most gnome stories that we hear. They're not quite like this. She talked about it getting after them, said that this thing would just not really chase them, but was almost like a horror movie, was always there. Right. Like when they first saw it and they started laughing, they ran in the house. Next thing you know, you're looking past a window and she's like, you see the top of the little hat come by. Right. Which is very, very strange because this thing is like 3 foot tall. So how's the hat get up there? Right. Who knows? Maybe it's crawl along the wall. Kyle had even done a story about that on AJ's podcast on Soul Wanderings, had talked about there being sightings of these gnomes that look just like tiny garden gnomes, but that they could crawl like lizards on the side of your house. And they're scurrying around. So this had gone on. So Tammy said her and her family eventually left. She took her kids and her husband, all that. They left back in 2010. So for 6 years, they put up with all this weird wackiness that was going on this place, dealing with whatever this little thing was. Now, what's really strange is she had gone back and was actually talking to the people that bought the house, and the people that bought the house from her said the exact same thing. They said, something's going on in that barn. We're not sure what it is. Now, you may remember this whole story when I talk about the fact that they also, they describe a yellow shirt on this little gnome that they had seen, the new owners, but it's a lot of the exact same thing. But they had gone into where they had a koi fish pond and that they had seen this thing grabbing koi fish out of the pond. And so the best story of the whole thing was the husband, the new owner, the family, the husband's and that family, the husband took off after seeing this, what he thought was a kid down there messing in his koi pond, messing around, right? So the husband takes off down there. When he gets down there, the husband's yelling at it. This thing turns around, he said, which is child size, so smaller than 3 foot, what he was saying. Shoots him the finger, yeah, hangs him the bird, starts laughing, and then runs off into the brush. And the husband said, there's like little kid footprints down there, and this little kid had a beard, whatever's going on. So there's, look, crazy story with this whole thing. It's pretty wild. Now, another really interesting story that I didn't get into on that was one that had happened way, this happened, I want to say, I believe it was 42, 43, roughly right in there. I believe it was right around the time that people were, you know, pulling together for the war, getting things going. And this happened in Indiana. And there was a fella told the story that he said his father had shared a story with him years ago that he was on a train ride in Indiana. And it just happened to look out the window. Now, it doesn't go any further to say if it was daylight or if, you know, it was dusk or in the morning or what it was, but said they were literally just riding a train through some fields, you know, just train riding, which sounds awesome. Train riding like that would be awesome. Said this fella looks out the window and what he is seeing is roughly little people holding hands and dancing in a circle in this field. He said they couldn't have been more than about 2.5 foot tall. Said they were dressed in very odd clothing, but that the guys had on the little hats and the women had on little bonnets and that they were dancing. And the woman sitting next to him, next to his father that's telling this story, said the woman sitting next to me leaned forward and looked and could not believe what she was seeing. She's like, those aren't kids. And he's like, no, ma'am, those are not kids. And that they danced in the circle, and then that was it. They're gone. You know, they're watching it. There it is. Then it's gone. And the dad was like, was it somebody that was trying to put on a show for us, just messing around? Or was, did we just happen upon some sort of fae celebration? But it wasn't just him. The woman beside him had this same experience. Y'all also might remember a story that came back from the 60s about a fella that had seen his dog. That's right. Me and Kyle had talked about it. Dog attack a gnome or a fae and rip it to pieces like a pack of dogs. It's a very, very strange story. The story goes that there was stray dogs in the town, about 4 or 5 of them, and they were in this little lot just hanging out. That's where the strays were. This fella says that he was sitting there taking a lunch break from his work, and he'd been doing a lot of landscape work and fixing some fence and doing that, was sitting under a shade tree. He said what he noticed on that fence was what he thought was a rabbit shot through the gap in the fence, this little under the bottom. Turns out, he said, it couldn't have been more than about 12 inches tall, and it was a person. He said, I could see arms and legs, and I could see that it was wearing a helmet as it come running by, and it smiled at him as it ran by. He said, as it ran by, it's like it realized it made a mistake because it popped out, and all of those dogs saw it running and gave chase. And he goes on to say that the little person was, of course, moving in a serpentine fashion, and that's not going to help. The dogs ran it down, attacked it. And it goes on to say that the really strange thing was that this thing, the whole time it was running, was looking back and smiling and laughing like it was playing a game, and said that it thought that it was fixing to get back to the fence, and that the hole was actually not much bigger than it was. So it knew that if it got to the fence, these big dogs couldn't catch it. And somehow, whatever it did, it missed its opening. It tried to make the jump to get through the hole, like to dive in, like a runner going to second in baseball, going to slide head first, right? He goes to jump through the hole. Well, he don't time it right. This thing slams into the fence, knocks itself out. Well, when it knocks itself out, well, the dogs are on it. And the dogs just pretty much demolish it and eat it. And he was like, I was trying to get to it to stop it because I wanted to save it. And I wanted to save the body if it was dead, whatever. He's like, there was no saving it. There was not much left of it. So that's another crazy story. We've covered these stories. But here's something that's very, very interesting. Again, this happened here in Texas. It happened a while back. This is how the story goes, that it was told to him by his grandfather, that swears that his grandfather saw this happen to him, and his brother saw this years and years ago. Now, the story starts that it had to have been back in the 20s at some point in time in Lafayette, Texas. The story goes that the granddad and all of his brothers were hanging out one evening. It was after the rains, and that there was a few puddles, you know, out there. And of course, you know how it's always, not always, but like it's cool after the rains, everything's nice. And said that him and his brothers were out, this guy's grandfather, this guy's grandpa and his grandpa's brothers were all out playing. And that they're just out having a great time sitting around. And he said, they're running and playing around in the water puddles. And of course you can imagine, you know, we didn't have, of course, everybody listening that was born around the same time I did, you know, we didn't grow up with any kind of crazy internet. So everybody older than me, of course, didn't. So the younger kids that had some stuff to look forward to, you know, they'd play indoors. We used to play outside, of course, till you couldn't see. So the grandpa goes on to say, hey, look, we were all playing out here on the edge of the streets, just walking, laughing, telling jokes. He said, you know, playing catch, riding bikes, just being kids. He said, we had finally kind of sat down and was just hanging out. And he goes, all of a sudden, this is the grandfather speaking. He said, I saw something moving on one end of the street. And I thought it might have been like a family of raccoons, a family of cats. It's something. I can't tell what this is. He said, but it was five things and they were very small. And he said, they were moving towards the storm drains. So for those of you that's unfamiliar with the storm drain, it's where Pennywise hides out, right? When he's looking up, trying to get the little boy with the boat and tears his arm off, whatever, the whole thing. Anyway, that's a storm drain. So these things are moving around. He goes, then he goes to notice in their height. He goes, man, maybe it's rats. And again, Kyle had also covered a story about rats, ended up being the Fae. Turns out that's what this is. They don't know what they're looking at. So they start kind of flipping rocks at it. They sneak up on it, flipping rocks. He goes, that's when we realized that they're 8 inch tall and what they describe as elves, little tiny elves. And that they started trying to talk and it wasn't coming out right. And the grandpa was like, we didn't know what they were saying, but we still understood it. We didn't understand the language, but somehow we understood what they wanted. And it was like they wanted us to join in their fun. They said, hey, come play with us. And you can imagine that seems like they're inviting you in for trouble. When you get into something like that, that seems like it's pure trouble right there. So the grandpa says, I got the impression that they would come up out of wherever they were and that this was the time that they got to play with the other kids. So if they would come back, that wherever they came from, they weren't allowed to play with us, with people, and they snuck off like other kids do, sneak off. They all want to play together. He said the grandpa tells a story that he got this impression, and I don't know how he understood the language or if it was something that it understood their language and knew how to talk to them, but that these things had been around for thousands and thousands of years on this planet, and that only once every few years or however it works out that they would come to the surface to look at, to check out what was going on. They would hang out with people that were surface dwellers, that were human beings, and then boom, they would go back into wherever they came from, and that's where that they'd only show up every now and again, which is a very neat angle on the Fae story, that the idea that they only show up every now and then just to check and see how we were doing and kind of interact with us. I kind of like that idea, the idea that maybe they're under a time limit. Like if you're going to go up there and hang out with them, this is, you get every 5 years or every 10 years or hell, every 100 years for a Fae, you know, who knows, you get to go up and spend 24 hours on the surface. And if you get caught by a group of dogs and they tear you to pieces, well, that's your fault. You know, I think back, what is it, folks? I'm sure y'all are going to send me. I'm sure there's gotta be somebody. Isn't there something called like a, doesn't the Mennonites, aren't the Mennonites the one that send their people? I believe they're the religion that send their kids at a certain age into town and, you know, into society, and then see if they're going to stay or if they're going to end up coming back. I believe it's something like that. So it almost seems like it's kind of like a test like that for these Fae. And maybe it was. But this fella talks about how the grandpa would tell these stories, and that after this, they would always go back to that area hoping to see them again, and they never saw them again. They never interacted. It was the one night, and that was it. And so that was the whole story that they had received. And so I was like, man, is there, what else would there be something? First of all, you're talking about 8 inches. You're talking very small. There was also a tale that I remember reading, and this came, of course, from out around Monahans, Texas, which is out in southwest Texas, which is, you know, in the same vicinity as we're talking about when we brought up the idea of those little hairy humanoids that were seen out there, the small Native Americans that were seen out there. There's a lot of this comes from this area. But a fellow that was working in the oil field, I remember writing, had written in to someplace. I can't remember where I read it, but I remember him describing a story of driving down the road late one night trying to go to Fort Stockton, and that he passed a dead deer on the side of the road. And as he was coming upon it, there was something eating it. And he thought maybe, oh, it's probably a coyote. And what he described was from the movie Critters. And if y'all haven't seen it, look it up. But a small, hairy, ball-like creature about 2 to 3 foot in height that had, he said that it looked, I remember him describing it, it looked exactly like it, just a little bit off color, but he kept talking about the teeth, that it had like mouth full of super sharp teeth. And I remember thinking how odd that is, because we don't hear a lot of story about those evil Fae. We heard the one in California, you know, with Tammy. We heard this howler, which is a little thing. So it's almost like, I don't know, I wouldn't say that maybe there's two different versions of the Fae. Maybe it's one. And maybe if he doesn't, maybe they need to feed on energy. Maybe that something does it. It's kind of like the gremlins. Maybe if they don't get something done, that it transforms them into an evil Fae. But in July of 1975, in Fiji, there was the Australian newspaper wrote about this, and this is what it says in it. According to students from the Latoka Methodist Mission School, about 8 mysterious little figures, 2 foot in height and covered with black hair, have been seen near the school. The figures, believed to be dwarves, hastily moved away into nearby bushes when the children began to approach them. And as the news spread, scores of neighbors rushed to the scene, and the dwarves could not be found upon further investigation and seemed to have jumped inside a pit near a bush. Since the first sighting, dozens of people have gathered near the pit in the hopes of seeing the dwarves. Some sat there for hours with sticks and torches in the event the little men might be harmful. The head teacher of the Methodist school, Miss Narewan, said he threatened the children with punishment, or Mr. said he threatened the children with punishment for made up stories, but they remained firm in whatever they have said about these mysterious figures. And that apparently 6 different students ranging in age from 10 to 14, I want y'all to keep that number in mind, actually saw the figures while returning home from school. And one student said, I saw his white gleaming eyes and black hair. I was frightened. One showed me his teeth and then ran away, claimed another student. And then David, a student who apparently saw 8 of the little people, wanted to speak to them. But as he approached them, the little ones ran away. And a longtime villager named Mr. Panasatora, who went to the scene after hearing the news, mentioned that when his forefathers came to Fiji, they saw little men already living there. Already living in Fiji were these little people. And so I'm like, okay, so again, we have Faye, but these seem to be more mischievous. I don't know why he's showing his teeth. Maybe he's got a good, you know, got some caps, some crowns. I don't know what he's doing, but he got a good blinged out grill. I don't know, but he's showing it off. So I got this email from Manny. And Manny, if you're listening, and I hope you are, thank you so very much for sending this in, because it falls in perfect with these stories and these little encounters. Now, I said I want you to listen and, you know, and pay attention to those, the ages of these people. For some reason, this seems to be the age, but this is what Manny says. Hey, guys, I absolutely love the show, and I love the stories you guys share. I'm a few years older than you two, so it's nice to hear an older perspective when it comes to things we all grew up with. I like that, Manny. Thanks. It says, anyhow, the story I want to share with you happened to me and my uncle when I was young, and he wasn't much older than I was when this happened. So I grew up on a reservation here in New Mexico, and we were very poor. And growing up like that has its advantages. One, being that when you're young, you don't know how poor you are because all your friends are just as poor as you. I'd like to say it was awful, but I have no regrets. We struggled, but we also lived a great life. I had fun and grew close, lasting relationships with my family and friends. Well, one of those family members was my Uncle Jay. Use our names, it's fine. We're both older, and I don't give a damn if people believe this or not. It doesn't change my mind about it. So my Uncle Jay isn't much older than I am. I'm 52. He's 55. And my grandpa had a new wife. And he says, ha ha. So Jay and I grew up more like brothers. I'm the only boy out of 4. I have a big sister and 2 little sisters. Having Uncle Jay around was great because we could play and be boys and everything was great. Not having much money and all this open country, we did what boys do. We would roam and camp and walk and explore every inch that we would get to on foot or on our bikes. Now, we both had made carts for our bikes out of old wagons and other stuff that we could gather from neighbors or the trash, so we felt like real explorers and we were pedaling all over the place. So one day during the springtime, Jay rode his bike over to my house, because we didn't live that far apart, and said we should go camping down by the river because it was going to be a full moon and we could see it real good that night. So we got all of our stuff, which wasn't really much. We used an old canvas drop cloth like painters use, and my dad had helped us put some sealer on it, and we used it like one of those Boy Scout tents you see. We would tie a rope between 2 trees and then stake down the corners and put our sleeping bags under it, and then bingo, we had camp. Sometimes we wouldn't even use that. If the weather was hot, we'd just lay out on the ground under some trees. Life was simple, and we lived it that way. We used milk jugs for water jugs, and we would make sandwiches for our food, but the best thing we had was an old spotlight that used one of those old 6-volt lantern batteries with the spring tops. It was old, but it was ours. We had been given to by a cousin, and we used it like the explorers did to search for clues and solve mysteries. Man, I love this. But we didn't have the money for batteries all the time, so it was a bit of a gamble if it worked. So this night found us camping in a little clearing about 75 yards in a circle and about 100 yards from the river that ran through this small canyon. I say river, but it was really more like a creek. the water was always flowing through it, and there was always a chance you might see a deer or something there, and for that reason alone, we loved going there. So sometime before this, we had built a little brush clubhouse there, but we didn't really mess with it this trip. At this time it happened, I was 10 and he had just turned 13 that January. We got our tent strung up on all our gear stowed away and gathered some firewood and got our little camp squared away for a night of bologna and cheese followed by a PB&J for dessert. Then I'm feeling that, Manny. Everything was normal, and we laid out our sleeping bags, looking up at the moon and stargazing for quite a long time, telling each other what we would do if we were astronauts and space travelers and typical kid stuff. We finally decided it was time for bed, thinking that we had really been up real late, but looking back now, it was probably only about 10. So we drug our bags back under the cover, laid down, and went to sleep. Now, I'm not sure what time it happened because we didn't have watches, but Jay woke me up saying, "Hey, Mud, do you hear something?" Now, Mud was a name my mom gave me when I was little. If there was a mud hole or any place to get dirty, she'd said that I could find it faster than anyone. He was whispering to me, and I told him I was awake, and he said, "Just listen and tell me what you hear." So straining to listen, I started to hear voices, like several people having a conversation. Now, this part's hard to explain, but it sounded far away because the tone wasn't full sounding, like when you hear someone talking from the room next door. But instead, it was like we were hearing something coming down the canyon. Being nosy kids, we thought that maybe the older kids had the same idea and were down the creek a ways having themselves a little party. So we quickly decided that maybe there were girls there and that we might catch one skinny dipping or something, of course, boys being boys. So we grabbed our prize spotlight and headed down the creek from camp and into that little canyon. Now, with the full moon, we didn't use the light and could easily follow the deer trail as it paralleled the creek. I don't know how far we went, but it seemed like a bit of a hike. But every time we had stopped to listen, it was like those voices were no closer than when we started. Well, we finally reached a bend in the creek where the water had carved a shelf out, and it had flattened an area out across from it and made it a little sandbar. Now, where this shelf was, there was a wall of cedar trees and scrub brush, and we could hear the voices on the other side. So we had to belly crawl under to get up to the creek on that shelf where we could see what was going on at the party. Well, the next part is burned into my eyes and into my ears for eternity. Just telling this brings it all back. Well, we quietly crawled, or as quietly as kids could, under those trees and inched up to the edge of that shelf. So we couldn't have been more than 60 feet or so from this party. Only what we saw wasn't the party that we hoped for. Close to the tree line on the opposite side, surrounded by the most part for some brush, but still on the little edge of the sand, was a small fire. And I mean small. Maybe the size of two fists. And sitting around this fire was five men. Five small men. All five looked like dirty little garden gnomes like you see on TV. They were dressed in brown and like earth-toned clothes. There were little packs sitting on the ground around them, and a couple of little walking sticks, and one had a little flute, and one looked to be cooking or preparing something near the fire. Now, they were all chatting and laughing in a language that is still a mystery to us, but they seemed to be having a hell of a time. I'd guess all of them were between 20 to 24 inches tall, and a couple looked older because they actually had gray beards. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and neither could Jay. We pushed back away from the shelf as fast as we could, and we headed back the way we came, stumbling and busting through brush. Along the way, Jay tried to turn on the light. It wouldn't work, so he just dropped our light and ran. We got back to camp, slid inside our makeshift tent, and crouched there together. We decided that when it got daylight, that we'd go back and look for our light, and then we'd get the heck out of there. Well, sometime in those early hours, we finally fell asleep. And when we woke up, neither of us knew what to say or really what to do. I asked him if it was a dream, or I asked, "Did you dream about that or something?" Something along those lines. And he said, "Nah, that was real, and that we needed to get packed and get back home." So we crawled out of the tent And don't forget that this is a covering. It doesn't have any doors or ends. It's just open. It just covered us. But beside the wagons that we had drug our stuff down there with was our light. I picked it up and clicked it on the little button, and the light came on. Now, we had dropped it I don't know how far back, but it was a good little run. I still feel like we were only maybe 300 to 400 yards from camp. And, of course, at night, it seemed much further to get where we had seen them. And, of course, when you walk at night, it seems like it takes forever. So real quickly, we packed up everything, and we biked back home. Neither one of us were even saying a word. When we got to my house, Jay just waved and kept riding towards his house. And after that, everything kind of changed. Jay started doing more teenage stuff, and I stopped going out into the country like that. We stayed close, and we're great buddies all through school, but we didn't do much camping or exploring after that. I didn't find out till some years later that Jay told his mom, my step-grandma, about it, and she laughed and said, "You're lucky they didn't take you." Jay said he got the impression that she knew something about this stuff, but would never say. Maybe her way of tricking him not to go back and play hide-and-seek or whatever in the dark, I don't know. Now, he and I are still good friends, as well as family, and we've only really discussed this encounter a couple of times, but he remembers it all the same way I do. So that's my story. I hope you liked it, and it wasn't too much rambling. I love hearing stories of the Fae and the little people of the woods. I believe they're always there. It's just very hard to see or to find them. Keep up the great work, guys, and thanks for taking time to read this, Manny. Manny, thank you so much for taking time to jot all this down and send it in. I hope you and Jay are still doing fine. And I don't even know what to say to that. I like it, the fact it's not overly told. Nothing crazy happened. They just spotted it. It almost seems like just little adventurers. I always think back to like the Mountain Men or the Revenant or any of the Hugh Glass. You think about all these Mountain Men stories. It almost seems like these little Fae are still living in that era. They're in that time. You don't see them dressed all fancy. You don't see all these fancy smartphones and satellite GPS communicator. You don't see all that. You just see little folks, men and women, living a life in nature, dancing in a circle, maybe eating some candy, maybe scaring some kids, maybe stealing a koi fish, maybe shooting a dude the bird. You don't ever know. These Fae sound like they're fun to hang out with, but you got to be careful. I just wonder how much of this truly involves the missing people and the missing 411. I hope y'all enjoyed this. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll go ahead and drive this little dumpling all the way back into the garage and put it up for the day. And we'll see what Kyle thinks about all this, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Expanded Perspectives is supported by you, our listeners. We make Expanded Perspectives free for you to listen to, but it definitely isn't free to produce. You can support the show monthly by signing up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. Just go to expandedperspectives.com/elite/. Or go to the website and click on the Elite tab and sign up for exclusive access to new Elite episodes every month, as well as the entire back catalog of every single Elite show we have ever done. That's over 220 episodes, all for only $5. Your monthly donation is used to pay for monthly data storage, editing software, music, sound effects, audio recording equipment, and research materials like books, videos, newspaper articles, and other restricted information locked behind a paywall. Also, if you enjoy Expanded Perspectives and you want to help us out, please rate and especially write us a review on iTunes or anywhere else you find us. Reviews are key to keeping Expanded Perspectives on the charts where people can find our show. Thank you so much for listening. We couldn't make Expanded Perspectives without you.
are back. Here we go. Yeah. Hope you enjoyed those. Manny, again, thank you for sending us the stories. Folks, if you have any stories involving not just the Fae, not just Bigfoot, but anything, anything strange and unusual you feel like sharing, don't forget to call 888-393-BRUD.
The Brud.
The Brud.
That's right. Or you can type it and send it to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, just like this person did. And I want to read this story because it kind of talks about, is this a possible Fae encounter?
Heck
someone
yeah,
had?
Lay it on me.
Check this out. It says, hey guys, been a regular listener for a few years now. Love Thanks. The diversity of the content that gets put out. I have a story you might find interesting.
I bet you do.
In the mid-1980s, my uncle and a number of his friends went to the Shenandoah National Park to do some hiking and swim in the natural springs that are located in the area. As they are headed back to the car lot, one of the friends in the group, a guy named Dave, decides he's going to jog ahead of the group and is quickly out of their sight. Naturally, everyone just assumes that they'll meet him back at the car. However, when they return to the parking lot, Dave isn't anywhere to be found. Someone in the group noticed that the light jacket that Dave had been wearing throughout the day was now inside of the vehicle. So, clearly he made it back to the lot at some point. Now, my uncle, along with a few others, were cross-country runners. They decided to run back up the trail a while, and the rest stayed with the car. After repeating this process several times over the course of a few hours, it is now starting to get dark, and the group is getting worried. A park official is flagged down in the car lot and is alerted about the situation. A small search party is formed, and just as they are about to head up the trail, Dave comes stumbling out of the woods. Now, mind you, he's not on a trail. He just comes out of the woods, looking somewhat disheveled and not quite right. When Dave is asked where he had gone, he simply says, I got lost. Now, the group asks, how could that have happened? The trails are well defined. And on top of that, his jacket had made it back to the car. Now, Dave at this point is insistent that he lost his way on the way to the car and refuses to say anything more about it. Everyone drops the bizarre nature of the situation for now and are just ready to go home. It's worth noting here that it was Dave's car that they all drove out there that day. But Dave, at this point, is unwilling to drive and turns his keys over to another friend. A few miles down the road, Dave becomes hysterical and starts screaming, oh my God! Oh my God! The atmosphere in the car is hair-raising at this point. Everyone is completely unnerved by this, and they try to console Dave, but he still refuses to explain what happened. Ultimately, Dave has never told anyone in the group what happened to him that day that would elicit this kind of reaction. Now, just to speculate for a moment, it seems like there are only a few explanations for Dave ending up off trail and absent for several hours. Could he have been the victim of an assault or rape? This one gets tossed out quickly when I speak with my uncle and the others that were there, but of all the places for something like that to occur, a national park seems unlikely. Secondly, his outburst in the car seems a bit too radical. Could he have possibly seen something that frightened him, causing him to run to the point where he ended up off trail and genuinely did find himself lost at that point? Some of this almost makes me think of certain aspects of David Politis' work. That's all I got, fellas. I'm sure it's a little different than what you usually get, but because it's speculative, but it's strange nonetheless. Nonetheless, thank you, Brandon from Virginia. So they don't know what happened to their buddy. But what I like to point out is how many times when you're reading about cases of Fae folk abduction, or like he mentions, missing hunters or missing hikers in the woods in David Politis' work, do the people, the adults especially, seem like they're confused, like they don't know what happened, like they're just kind of out of it?
Mm-hmm. First of all, Brandon, thanks for sending it in. All I could think of when you were talking about that right then was him, you know, saying that he'd been lost, right?
And apparently he had ran ahead and took his jacket off, put it in the car, and then ran back into the woods. So that's what they're thinking, that something scared him off and he was just trying to get out of there.
Well, what I'm thinking about, though, is the fact that he said he was lost. you're not going to be so lost from an area that they were at that you wouldn't hear other people driving, them yelling your name, other people running. It's almost like he was in that bubble. You know, we've talked about people being in that behind the veil and they can see things going on, almost like the part of people that were involved in time slips, is they see things going on and they're not part of it and they can't get the attention of those on the other side.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't gone enough, how far he would have had to have sprint ahead, take his coat, put it in the car, and then literally wind sprint for as fast and as far as you could, as deep as you could get into the woods and not come out, or you would have to, you know, to try to get yourself lost for the amount of time, because there wasn't a long amount of time that they were apart, or he was hiding out there in the woods.
Why would he even go off trail?
Why would he not just wait at the car?
Well, that's what, something frightened him. So say it was just like a mugger.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just, if you, I mean, it sounds like the guy's in good shape. Wouldn't you just run up the trail? Why would you go running out into the woods?
What's frightening about a mugger? Is he just going to jump out with a knife? Because if he's got a knife and you turn and ran, you're going to run right back to the car where your friends are at.
And then why would you refuse to tell your friends even to this day what happened? Like if something like that happened to me and I was like, man, I got lost. Let me tell you, when I was trying to get my trunk unlocked and some guy showed up, pulled a gun on me and was trying to rob me. So I ran in the woods. Like, why the mystery? It's like the guy doesn't want to say what frightened him.
Yeah.
And he was like, he was in a daze. Like
he can't comprehend what happened.
When he came out of the daze in the car.
Because another thing, you just brought up a perfectly good point. Another thing is if it was a mugger, why wouldn't you make the phone call? Why wouldn't you call the police? Why wouldn't you call
somebody? You would at least tell your friends.
Call the cops. I just got robbed. But now you wouldn't just sprint off like.
And he was like in a daze. And when he came to, that's when he was like, oh God, oh God. Like he was freaking out.
Where was this at?
The Shenandoah, let me look here. You're going to get the pronunciation. Shenandoah National Park. I'm not sure. You'd have to search where that is.
I wonder if that could be Squatchy. Maybe you run across a Squatch.
Well, that's the mystery of the story. It could be almost anything. But since you were talking about gnome attacks and things, I think that maybe he was
These stories of the Fae really do have a lot more to play in these missing people things than we realize.
Yeah, that's...
It's silly. And look, but I mean, let's be honest. Everything that we all truly talk about could be misconstrued as silly. I mean, we enjoy it for what it is. But yeah, I mean, you could easily... Oh, is it silly? Yeah, these people just went missing. Yeah, maybe a Fae folk got them.
Yeah, it's in Virginia. I should have known
perfect.
That. The Shenandoah Valley. It's like a lot of famous Civil Wars there.
It looks very pretty around there.
Virginia's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what that could be. Or maybe it was... spirits of some sort or ghosts of some sort.
To me, it has to be something paranormal or supernatural, because why wouldn't you just tell people what happened? Like, the guy tried to rob me.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was getting at with the knife. If you're going to run from a man with a knife, why wouldn't you run back towards your friends? Even if he was in between you and your friends, couldn't you circle around? You know, I mean, like, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, no.
And if it was a gun, you're not going to run because you can't outrun the bullet. So, like, it has to be something more than what, like a regular robbery.
Yeah. I mean, lots of people pull guns. People don't even intend to use them, which I wouldn't recommend, but you know, that does happen.
Yeah.
People use fake guns.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of people that are shot because they tried to pull off a robbery with a fake gun.
Yeah.
Reminds me of what's that movie where it's written replica on the side? Snatch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind
of deal. Bullet Tooth Tony.
You know, if you look into like bank robberies and stuff, the average amount, because of watching movies, you think that these bank heists...
Here we go, folks. He's been going down a rabbit hole again. Go on.
These bank heists. You think that people rob a bank, they're set for life. In reality, like the average... I don't have it in front
of me. Like 15 grand?
Not even that. The average amount stolen is only like 1,500. Like you're putting your life in a lot of jeopardy. You're
better off at robbing a strip club than you are at robbing a bank.
Right? Or just a place that does nails.
Folks, you're not going to believe this, but while I was talking to you about the phone number, I noticed that we had a first test call that I haven't even checked. But what the weirdest thing about it is I'm pretty sure the phone number that came up is Mr. Filson's phone. I'm almost positive that you're now Kyle likes to watch hockey and he likes to drink beer. And sometimes when those two go a little too far, he'll make some crazy phone calls.
Oh, were you listening to my test calls?
Let's see if this test call works.
Remember, Pat, do you have a sweet tooth? Do you believe in the power of a curse?
Have you had your hearing tested?
What is that?
Planning a trip soon? Can you remember the tallest man you've ever seen? Do you love to go wandering beneath a clear blue sky?
What is that from?
That's you calling into the show drunk, asking me questions. Do I remember the tallest man I've ever seen? He cares for me, folks. You're listening. Do I want to go wandering under the clear blue sky?
That's hilarious.
You need to lay off of the old style.
Where'd you get
bud?
That clip?
Man, I don't know. I don't remember. I'd found it on Instagram somewhere. It's, what is his name? Jonathan Rhys or whatever it is that's used to be on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh, that's hilarious.
He's the guy that does all this stuff. Well, I've got him. Yeah, here's you another one.
No way. Not this time. We created it. Not this time. No, not this time.
Waiting for you to ask me a question about a story. What do you think? No, no way. Not this time.
Right? Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, folks, I hope y'all enjoyed all the madness for today. It might be a little bit longer than normal, but yeah, that's what we got going on. We got some other surprises up our sleeves. Hopefully we got worked out. I'll get the kinks worked out this weekend or so. Then we'll hit you with that little bit of goodness. I've got some crazy Bigfoot battle story I've got coming up on the Elite Show. Yeah, it's pretty wild. I don't want to give away too much of it, but yeah, it's some more of that wild stuff. I love the idea of people and hunters and campers and outdoorsmen getting surrounded or getting involved with like some scuffles with the big feats. So that's kind of the reason I'm throwing that out on the Elite Show this time.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah, and also go over there and check out our interview on Monsters Among Us. It's pretty cool. He does an episode on museums.
Mm-hmm.
And people call in and leave their sightings or experiences they had while working at museums. You know, most of it's like ghosts and stuff. And then we talk about it and stuff. But it's pretty cool.
And you got to listen to the whole thing. I'm talking to the very, very end because there's some surprises. Whenever people think it's wrapped up, there was a little bit more added to it. So don't just bounce off of it. And then, like we said, we were on there with AJ too Wednesday. We got to do that live. And it's fun to do them live every now and then.
I agree.
Yeah. It was a good time. So, yeah, that's what we got going on. That's pretty much it. So what do we got rocking for the rest of the week? You got a crazy weekend, don't you?
Yeah, I got a crazy weekend. I got a baseball tournament. That's and it. Then next week, we're going to be talking to the guys from Sasquatch Tracks.
Yep, yep.
So that'll be fun.
Good to get on there and chat. I have a jiu-jitsu tournament to go to this weekend. I have four teammates competing, and I'm going to go video and kind of just be there the whole deal. There's several of us that's going to go, but I'm going to be over there so I can yell at them and just show my support.
Have you been showing them ninjutsu?
No, I haven't showed them. I can't show them the Dumak. Can't show them the death touch.
The Unagi slam or whatever. What's
the drop Sanagi and all that? Yeah. Those crazy hip tosses and stuff. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I've hurt myself. I have an injury on my right forearm and an injury on my left shoulder. So that's called old age in jiu-jitsu. And so that's how that works.
That sounds good. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.